Okay, here we go for the final session. The crazy person's way to find peace of mind. It's so important in these days to find some peace. And in our modern world, we have actually lots of resources, lots of money, able to come and go wherever we want. We live in big houses with hot and cold running water, air conditioning, good health. Oh, we can even watch movies in our house on the TV. So many wonderful things are happening today. But the one thing which we're missing is peace. You can have lots of wealth, lots of health, if you haven't got peace of mind, what's the purpose? And so unless we have peace of mind, we are all crazy. And that's what we mean by being crazy. A crazy person is someone, what they see, what they hear, they misinterpret it, and they create problems where there should be no problems. I was just telling this simile, one of my favorite similes, but there's people here for the first time, they may not have heard this one before. One of my favorite similes to show how crazy people are was a story of the two chicken farmers. I just told this story to a couple a few moments ago. They have a lot of trouble in work with a difficult boss. And because they have trouble at work, they take all that stress and tension back home with them. Now that's being crazy. And to understand what I mean by this, we tell the story of the two chicken farmers. First chicken farmer goes into the shed where the chickens live early in the morning to collect the produce from the night before. So he takes his basket and walks into the shed and fills the basket up with chicken shit and leaves the eggs in the shed to rot. And he brings the shit into the house and stinks the whole house out. That's what we call crazy chicken farmer. Chicken farmer number two goes into the shed with the basket to collect the produce of the night before. He leaves the shit to rot and fills the basket with eggs. So he takes the eggs into the house, makes an omelette for his family, and sells the rest of the eggs in the market for cash. That's a clever, smart, wise Buddhist chicken farmer. Now, the meaning of that simile is, when you collect the produce of your day and take it home with you after work, what do you collect? What do you put in your basket and bring home? The shit or the eggs? Are you a shit collector or an egg collector? Now I think most people, even if you put a little bit in the basket of the bad stuff, it stinks all the eggs, you can't eat them. Now the moral of that story is, why is it that as human beings, what goes wrong in our day, in our week, in our life, is what we remember and collect and bring home into our present moment? Why do what happens, a bad thing which happened to us today, why do we keep that at the expense of all the beautiful, wonderful experiences you've had today, last week in your life so far? We do collect shit. No wonder we are sad, depressed, upset, angry. So really, we should just collect the beautiful experiences of our day, of our life, and leave the rest in the past to rot. That way, we become wise and not crazy. I know some people, when I first started talking like this, they said, aren't you supposed to remember the faults so you can learn from the mistakes of life? You ask any psychologist, and they will confirm what the Buddha realized 2,500 years ago. You learn much more effectively, quicker and better, by remembering what went right, by reflecting on the successes than you ever do by thinking about what went wrong. That works as well in business as it does in life. When people working in business, too often when something goes wrong, they start analyzing it, talking about it, remembering it. And what happens? Everybody gets dispirited. You want to blame someone. Negativity comes into the office and morale goes down. But if you remember on what went right, then everyone feels uplifted, they feel worthwhile, energy goes into the office, people feel high morale, they're energized, and also they tend to repeat the causes which made for that success. If you learn from the successes and forget the mistakes, you learn much more, more effectively and quicker. That works as well for business as it does for marriages, as it does for your life, as it does for meditation. So you leave the pain of the past behind and you learn from what went right. Now why on earth can't we do that in, say, our marriages? Some people are married and they're as crazy as when they were kids. In other words, they always look at the faults in their partner, the faults in themselves, and they remember the mistakes. And eventually, if you keep filling up your mind with the shit of your marriage, of course, you know, it stinks so much, you can't stand it and you want to leave. This is what happens. Remember the things which went wrong. Now, why on earth don't we remember the things which went right? The happy times you've had together, the beautiful moments of your life together. The times when you were happy and why you were happy. If you keep remembering that, you will tend to get encouraged, inspired, and you will tend to repeat the causes of that happiness. So this is not being a shit collector, it's being an egg collector. That story was told by Ajahn Chah years and years and years ago. And that is positive psychology, which stops you being crazy. Because a crazy person is someone who has so much shit, if you like, please excuse me for using this word, so many problems and difficulties and negativity, it drives them insane. Have you ever noticed happiness drive anyone insane? Or positive feelings? It's always the pain, the difficulty, the hurt which drives you insane, never the happiness. Which is why that if you really are wise, you really want to learn about life, and you really want peace of mind, we have to develop that happiness. Which is why I mentioned this to someone during the break here, and it's a great little quote, because they were asking me about busy people and meditation. They said, well, look, you know, we have to find the time to meditate, and if you just allow people to meditate for 1 minute a day, they're never going to get anywhere. And actually my answer, which I should have really said during the talk, first of all you have to find meditation and then you find time afterwards. You don't find time first and then meditate. You find meditation first and then you find the time. What I mean by that is once you find meditation, you find the peace, the joy, the happiness, the ease of meditation, you like it so much, of course you find the time. People always find time for what they like. So you have to find meditation first. And then we find the time afterwards. Which what I mean by that, a minute of meditation, 2 minutes, whatever it is, to find the joy and the peace of meditation first, think, oh, this feels really nice. Then quite naturally the time will be found to extend the periods of meditation. You meditate more and more and more naturally because you enjoy it. That's certainly my life. First time I meditated was in the Wordsworth Room of King's College, Cambridge. I still remember it because it was one of the turning points of my life. In 1969, must have been about December, November. Remember the time and the place. Just sitting down, meditating for 5 minutes, never meditated before in my life. And it felt so peaceful. I remember afterwards saying, there's something really wonderful and beautiful in this. And of course, that was changed my whole life. So that's why I found meditation first, and then I found the time to be a monk. What, 34 years now almost. So imagine how much time I found. So we find meditation, we find peace, we find happiness, and the time thing just happens naturally. People won't meditate because they don't know what meditation is yet. And that's why you say, I don't want to meditate, or I'm too busy to meditate, because you don't really know what it is. You find meditation first, the peace, the happiness, it feels so wonderful, so lovely. You can't help yourself but wanting to meditate more and more and more. Because that happiness is finding peace. The crazy person's way to find peace of mind, I've already mentioned a little bit about that crazy elephant, the crazy water buffalo. You don't find peace of mind by fighting the crazy mind, by trying to control the mad water buffalo. People try that, they think that you are stronger than your mind, that if you exert enough willpower, you can stop this mind. And of course, you can never do that. The crazy person is the ordinary person, and the only way to make peace with the crazy mind is saying, I allow my mind to be crazy. Come on, mind, you can be as crazy as you want to be. To understand this, one of the stories I tell, a personal story. I was a monk for six range retreats as a monk, just 6 years. And after training, usually train in a monastery for 5 years, and then Ajahn Chah would actually send you off by yourself. We called it in Thailand going tudong. In Sri Lanka it's called charika, it means just wandering. You are basically asked to leave your monastery, taking all your possessions with you, and you can wander wherever you wanted to go. You know, that was one of the most delightful periods of my monastic life, actually of my life. I finished 5 years of basic training as a monk, and now you could just go. But in Thailand, there were so many places you could stay. So even these days, being a monk or a nun is like having membership of Diners Club. You can go to any monastery, any center, and get food and a bed for the night. It's a wonderful club to join because we have offices all over the world. But especially in Thailand, if you didn't want to stay in a monastery, you could sleep out under the trees. You could go to any village in the morning on alms round, you'd always get something to eat. So I left with all my possessions on my back. Part of the rule was you could not keep anything with anybody. You couldn't keep it in the storeroom of the monastery, nor with any friends. You either had to give it away or take it with you. And so very quickly, actually the first day I hardly had anything to carry. But after a few days, even that got about reduced by 50%. Had my bowl, spare robes, a mosquito cloth, a flask for water. It was the most wonderful feeling of having all your possessions carried with you, and they were light, they weren't burdened down, and you could go wherever you wanted. When you came to any crossroads, you go left, right, straight ahead or backwards. You had no agenda, no place to be or get to. It was the most freedom I ever felt in my life. Nowhere to go, nothing to be, complete freedom like a bird, flying wherever I wanted. It was a wonderful time. Our possessions actually burden us. The more we have, the more crazy we are. The less we have, the more free we feel. That's what it was like in those days. No monastery to carry with me, no burdens, just my bowl and robes, just like a bird. You know, I've watched birds migrate from continent to continent, but never once have I seen a bird carrying a suitcase. They don't even have a bum bag with their money in it. In fact, that simile was so popular that there's a German edition of my book, The Mindfulness Bliss and Beyond, and that's actually a new edition. I just saw the brochure in the book catalogue, and they've called it The Bird Without a Suitcase. That's the title of a book in German by me. Because that's like freedom. So anyway, eventually when it got to our range retreat period, we're supposed to stay in one monastery and not wander around. It's our tradition. so that we can do more meditation in one place and stay put. So after wandering around, I found a perfect monastery. It was up in the mountains above Chiang Mai, maybe about 50, 60 kilometers away from Chiang Mai, way up in the mountains. There was a lovely valley, and in the valley you couldn't see any houses. The village, maybe six houses, was over the hill. So whatever they did, whatever noise, you would not hear them. And as for traffic, you would see only one car would come up each week to bring up the mail and to take out some produce, some pomelos, back down to the town down below. You'd have to be watching at a particular time of the day, one day a week, to see the traffic, which is one car a week. So it's a perfect monastery. And I was alone there, nothing to do, very easy to look after. And oh, I was just having such a wonderful time for the first couple of weeks. But then my mind started to get restless. I started thinking. And the more I tried to stop my mind, the more it started to think. The problem was the type of thinking which was going on in my mind. I call them these days unmonkish thoughts. I think you understand what that means. The thoughts of old girlfriends, thought of sex, romance. Now, I was 6 years as a monk at this time, and I really wanted to be a monk. I didn't want these thoughts. I liked being a monk, but they kept on coming into my mind. And the more I tried to stop them, the more they came in. And the worst thing about this experience was I had no one to talk to. I was alone in this monastery for 3 months. I remember on this one occasion, my mind went so crazy thinking about all sorts of deviant thoughts, thoughts of things a monk should never think about. And I was so crazy, so desperate, I went into the main hall and bowed to the Buddha and said, "Help." And I don't know why, that inspiration came up. Maybe because I was a Westerner, I say, let's do a deal. And the deal was this. The deal was, I'd watch my breath for most of the day, but if my mind really wanted to think about girls, I'd give myself from 3 p.m. till 4 p.m. every afternoon, and you can think whatever you want then. Sounded fair enough to me. If my mind wanted to follow those fantasies, I'd allow myself 1 hour every day. 3 to 4 p.m. The rest of the time you behave. That was the deal. So, I went back to meditate, and it was as bad as ever. All these thoughts coming, saying, "Get out, I want to be a monk, watch your breath, watch the breath," and the picture of an old girlfriend would come up, "Shut up." And it was so tiring and so frustrating having a mind like that. But when it came to 3 p.m., I had to keep the other side of the bargain. So I went up to my hut. I was so tired. I leaned against the wall and put my feet out and said, "Okay, mind, you want to think about anything, anything under the sun, anything goes." And for the next hour, my mind watched every breath without any problem whatsoever. It was crazy. I couldn't understand what's going on, but now I understand perfectly what was going on. When I tried to control my crazy mind, it got worse. Much worse. And that's why I was fighting so much, you know, being ashamed of having these thoughts. I was trying so much to stop them. I realized that was what was feeding them. When I let go, the magic word, "Okay, whatever you want to think is fine by me," the mind watched every moment of every breath. It was amazing just how easy it was. And I learned a very, very valuable lesson there. I understand where the crazy mind comes from. From being controlling, wanting, and too much will. That's where you go crazy. And I've noticed that the people who are the biggest control freaks, they go through this progress, this procession of states. They want to get control. Maybe they become managers and your manager. And eventually, when you want to control, sometimes it just doesn't go the way it should do. You get frustrated. all control leads to frustration because you find that you do not have power. The world works according to its natural causes. You can't control the world. You can't even control yourself. How can you control other people or control nature? When you have will, strong will, you soon get frustrated. Frustration then leads to anger, where you sort of blow up and shout at other people out of desperation. And after anger, you know what the next stage is? Depression. You just give up. What's the point? And I've seen that the reason why that many people are depressed these days is because they're control freaks. We control so much, we think we have so much power, that where we get through frustration, anger, after anger, depression comes next. It's a crazy way of dealing with things. And depression makes you crazy. The alternative is letting go a bit more, flowing along with things, not sort of controlling things so much. This is the way life is. This is the way husbands are. This is the way wives are. One of my favorite stories about the craziness of human beings and the solution to that craziness is the story of the two Thai sisters. These two sisters came to me for counseling. They were sisters. They were very good supporters of our monastery. So I made an appointment and I saw them. And Asian tradition, I asked the elder sister first of all, what's your problem? Her problem was her husband. She was having a lot of difficulty getting on with her Western husband. Maybe some cultural problems, having arguments. And she was really thinking that it was the time to separate. But you know, usually as a Buddhist, I try and keep people together because I think if they can work through those problems, once they're on the other side of those problems, they become wonderful human beings. If they can, it's really worthwhile putting forth the effort. So I was given her all these skillful means, all this advice on how she could keep together with her partner. But in the end, I mean, she was still on the edge, should I, shouldn't I? Her problem was with her husband. Then I turned to her sister, her younger sister, what's your problem? And she said, well, you know, I've had many boyfriends, but they only last about a month. And I can't tend to keep any boyfriends. I really want a long-term relationship. And I'm getting old now. I want someone to share my life with. I want someone to love and someone who loves me. I want a husband. When she said that, I thought of a solution. I said, your sister's got a husband she doesn't want. And you want one. Why don't you swap? I was really surprised they wouldn't have a bar of that. They're sisters anyway. Don't you love each other enough to share? And that made them laugh. But then I told them the deeper meaning. I turned to the elder sister who had a husband and said, madam, you have got what we call in Buddhism husband dukkha, husband suffering. Because all you girls will know that if you have a husband, sometimes it's really difficult. And that's called husband suffering. It's a term, type of dukkha, which you'll only know if you've got a husband. And I said, your sister has got what we call single woman suffering. Now, when you're looking for a partner, when you're alone, you get a lot of freedom being alone, but there's something which is missing. That's that sort of missing that I want someone to share my life with. That's called single woman suffering. And I said, look, to the elder sister, if you get rid of your husband, you separate, you will not have husband suffering anymore. Husband dukkha will be finished. You'll have what your sister has, single woman suffering. And you single one, if you find a husband, that type of pain and suffering which you don't like, of being single and being alone, that will disappear. And you'll have your sister's dukkha. You'll have married people suffering. And that's the same with young men. They're looking for a partner in life. As a young man, without a partner, you have young man suffering. But when you get married, you have married man suffering. And some of you want children. You have sort of no children suffering. You think, oh, wouldn't it be nice to have this? You have this feeling, this urge, you want to have a child. Once you have a child, you won't have that suffering of having no offspring. You'll have having children suffering. Oh, I've got to wake up in the morning, I've got to worry about this, I've got no time for myself. So what happens next is that some people, they don't want a husband, they don't want a wife, they don't want kids, because they know all that suffering. So they renounce and become monks or nuns. And it's true, once you become a monk or nun, you don't have husband suffering, you don't have wife suffering, you don't have kids suffering, you have monk suffering. It's true. So the point is, when we understand Dhamma, we understand by changing the situation, by changing your wife and getting a new one, or changing your husband and getting a newer model, trading the old one in for something better, or by changing your job, or changing your marital status, or changing whether you're a layman or a monk. When I was a young monk, when I was like a baby monk, I used to look up the head of the line and see all these abbots. And I think, wow, they get the best food. Just like me, you know, people feed me the delicious food. Like the young little novices, they got what's left over. And I used to think as a young monk, because food was really difficult over in Thailand. And by the time it got to the monks like me, there was only just the gravy left, and you know, all the other vegetables and best rice had all gone. And I thought, you know, this is really unfair. Because when you look up the top of the line, all the old monks, they're the fat ones, like this one. All those senior monks, they don't need food. It's those small, skinny ones. We're the ones who need them. And not only that, all the novices, we had to sit on the hard concrete. And all the senior monks, the big abbots, they had all the fat seats, you know, the big cushions. I said, what do they want a big cushion for? They've got natural upholstery. We're the ones who should have the big cushions. We're full of bones. And those senior monks, those abbots, they decide all the work projects. They decide to build the hall or to, you know, to build a road. And we're the ones who have to do the work. It's all right for them sitting down talking to people all day, having fun, and going off to Kuala Lumpur and PJ and Kuching, teaching the Dhamma. That's a wonderful life, but we have to stay at home and work. It's really unfair. I had what's called young monk suffering. Now I'm an old fat monk. I look at those young monks. Oh, those young monks have such an easy time. They don't have to answer all these problems which people have. People come up to me and say, oh, my husband is playing around. And so I give them some advice. And another lady comes up and says, oh, my husband is playing around. And I say, give her some advice. And the next woman comes up, oh, my husband is... All the same problems. I think, why me? Why do I have to answer all those problems? As I said, I think the other day, I became a monk so I didn't have to worry about marriage. And what would I know about marriage anyway? Never been married, I've been a monk. So I call that abbot suffering. So in the end, sometimes, you know, the monks ask me, said, how can you do all this, travelling around, talking to people all day, signing all these books? Don't you ever get fed up signing all these books? And I said, I could get fed up if I wasn't wise enough. That's, you know, author suffering. But I realised that you accept this, you make peace with it, you let it be. Doesn't matter what you have to do in life, whether it's traveling, suffering. Oh, I remember telling this story in Singapore. Now, I'd been doing, this was last year, or was it the year before now? I did a Dharma teaching tour of Europe and North America. It was so tiring, going from place to place, giving talks and stuff. And I was on my way back, and flying from LA, you know, via Singapore. And it's a long flight, and I was really tired, and I'd been working so hard. But I've got many sort of disciples, you know, working SIA, Singapore Airlines. And so they were waiting for me at the gate to take me into the lounge and get some breakfast, because I arrived early. Very kind of them, actually, to meet me and give me a breakfast. But as soon as they took me into the lounge, they didn't just give me a breakfast. Can I ask a question, please? And I thought, okay. So I never get a free meal as a monk. No such thing as a free lunch for an abbot. They're asking all these questions. They're getting so tired because always they're asking, ask one more question. It's always one more question. And then another one more question. I'm getting so tired. I really was tired. So I thought, how can I get out of this? And I thought, I had an idea. Go to the toilet. At least I could sit down and be quiet. But you know what happened? True story. I went into the toilet of the lounge at Changi Airport. And as soon as I walked in, the toilet attendant recognized me. Ajahn Brahm, can I ask a question? And even the toilet attendant kept asking me questions. And I realized there's no escape. No escape. So if I wanted to, I could very easily go crazy. But I don't go crazy. Just allow things to be. It's my karma. So I must have asked heaps and heaps of questions of some arahat in a past life and gave him headache, and now I have to pay for it. But I enjoy it and have fun. So whatever you have to do, if you get negative about it, complain about it, get angry about it, that's called controlling. That leads to frustration. Frustration leads to anger. Anger leads to depression. You go crazy that way. So why fight when you can't sort of do anything about it? Instead, I just put fun and happiness to whatever I have to do in life. And that's why you don't go crazy. If you have a crazy lifestyle, you know, what people think is a mad lifestyle, going around all the place and doing all these strange and weird and wonderful things. But, you know, I really enjoy it because, you know, I just, the other day, opened an art exhibition. And, you know, the art exhibition was for impermanence. What is it called? Impermanence and Change or something in Perth. Go on the radio, go on TV. I do all sorts of weird things. One of the weirdest things I ever did was I went on this live radio show because I had some disciples who were working in a big radio station in Perth. And they said, well, you know, why didn't you come along and do sort of a talkback show one evening? And I said, oh, sure, I'm into that. So I turned up one night, because I'm very busy. The only time I could come was from 10 till midnight. And so after I gave a talk, I don't mind doing interesting things, you know, so I went over there. But I was very heedless. My mistake was I never asked what the program was. So when I went to the radio station, I was actually ushered into the studio because I only got there just in time. I had the headphones on, the microphone was in front of me. We had about 1 minute before we went live. And the MC or whatever, the person who was running the radio show, introduced me to my co-host. There's a lady called Dr. Gabriel Morrissey. I said, what's your speciality? And she said she was a sexologist. I thought, oh my goodness. What have I got myself into? What type of show is this? And the person running the show said it's some adult themes. It was an adult show where people, the general public, were ringing in to get advice on their, you know, their personal problems. And there I was, a Buddhist monk, celibate for over 30 years. And people ringing up. It's a silly situation I get myself into, but once you're inside the city, you can't go anywhere. You're stuck there. So I made the best of it. And so I had great fun telling people about their private lives. And you know, amazing thing, that's actually a word because, I was, you know, how do we pronounce your name? Ajahn Brahm. Always remember there's an M on the end. Otherwise it sounds like ladies' underwear. They could not pronounce it. So in the end we decided Mr. Monk. That became our name. So all these people were ringing up. It's live, you know, live sort of live to air. They're ringing up on the telephone. and asking all his personal problems. And what I was really surprised at, they were all asking if they could either talk to the expert, Dr. Morrissey, who's well known in Australia, apparently. She writes books on personal problems. You know, she's a professor at some university, a professor of psychology on sex, basically, and you know how to do it, and I don't know what else. And after about 5 minutes, all these callers, they were directing their questions to me. Here's a question for Mr. Monk. And this expert there was doing absolutely nothing, getting bored. Well, all the questions were coming to me. And it's amazing, even if you haven't had sex for 35 years, you become the expert. And you know why? Because you don't know the actual app, you know where things, you know emotions, you know the way of the mind. And that's why people are just so interested in like the monk's perspective on these things. You know, it's all about sort of, you know, fear and just going above fear, relaxing, letting go, you know, all these things. You know, I don't know why I say these things, but once you know how the mind works, you know how everything works. You know, once I was at another conference, and this was a conference on transport, because the local government, well, the state government of West Australia, they wanted to know about the way forward with like transport policies. Whether they have more trucks, bigger roads, or more rail transport. And they wanted members of the general public, because I knew a few of the politicians, they said, why don't you come along, get the Buddhist perspective on transport. So I'd never done that before, so okay, I'm in. So the minister invited me over there, so I went to this conference, and they were talking about trucks and stuff like that. But in the interval, one of the journalists, you know, because I stood out, I don't know why I stood out, the journalist interviewed me. And there was a journalist for like a shipping paper. And they interviewed me about, you know, my views about shipping and rail and transport. And look, I don't know anything about that business. But, you know, I gave my sort of answers. And I saw him about 6 months later. I completely forgot about that interview, but he actually told me. He said, Ajahn Brahm, you know, I wrote that article. I called it, you know, Zen and the Art of Shipping. And he said, you wouldn't believe it, he told me. I didn't believe it, but he said it was absolutely true. That article was syndicated to all the major shipping papers and magazines of the world. And he said he got heaps of feedback. And the feedback he got regularly from many people was, we don't know who Ajahn Brahm is, but that monk certainly knows what he's talking about. And I didn't know anything what I was talking about. I was just making it up as I went along. But when you're in that situation, you just let go and allow it to be. It's amazing what you can do when you just make peace. You don't fight, you don't control. You just enjoy all these amazing silly things which happen to you in life. And then you don't go crazy. So the purpose of crazy is just you enjoy it, whatever life gives you. You make peace with it. And life is so interesting. Sometimes people say, don't you get bored being a monk? Wow, I don't get bored being a monk. I do all sorts of interesting things. One of the other interesting things I did a couple of years ago, which was fascinating, because Queen Elizabeth II, she was visiting Australia for Commonwealth Games. Now, Malaysia was obviously in Commonwealth Games. That was in Melbourne in, was it 2006 or 7 or 4 or 5 or what, I don't know. I live too much in the present moment. That's why sometimes I'm late for my aircraft. But because she came over to Australia, they wanted a bit of a religious thing to just beforehand. So I got invited, first of all, to Sydney to speak at an interfaith conference in front of Queen Elizabeth. And one thing I actually found out about her, because I was sitting right in the front, and there she was, no, I was sitting opposite to her, because we were just in front, and she was sitting in the front row with Prince Philip, and who else was there? I think Prince Edward or someone. The three of them were there. And during the sermon, because most of the service was done by the Anglicans, the Queen was wearing a big hat. And I found out why Queen Elizabeth always wears big hats. No, because she had her head down during the sermon. She fell asleep. It's true. She did. Because I was watching her, and I could see her nod up, you know, just as if you'd just woken up. And the reason he has a big hat, because you can't see her eyes close. So the TV cameras can't catch her when she's taking 40 winks. So later on, so you met her, and the most interesting thing was there's three appointments, and the third one was a state dinner. The state dinner in Parliament House in Canberra. I was invited there, and I was so pleased because there was the head Anglican priest of Australia, but the head Anglican and myself, we were the only religious people there. I don't know actually how I got in, but it was actually quite difficult getting in, because I received the invitation, from the Prime Minister, John Howard, and on the invitation was the dress code. This was a state dinner. And I looked down the list, there were three options. Tuxedo. Not one person in my monastery had I couldn't borrow it from anybody. So what else we've got? Next one on the list was military uniform. With medals. No, it's not military uniform. I looked at the third choice. It was long dress. I was in. So I went under long dress. And it was great fun, because I said all these important people, like Lachlan Murdoch was there, you know, huge rich people, and all these powerful generals and ambassadors and politicians. So when I went in there, I was stopped by security. I said, "Are you supposed to be here?" And I thought she had my invitation. "See, it's here, that's me, I can go in." So they let me in. I had great fun in there, because I was the only Buddhist monk in there, and, you know, you could have good fun. Of course, I didn't have any dinner, but actually what I did have, this is actually what a monk eats when you have dinner with the Queen of England. First plate. They had some fish course, because it has to be like Australian, had Australian fish. And for me, I had Australian cheddar. A whole plate of cheddar. And you know, this was we can eat cheese in the afternoon as monks, but this was the most delicious cheese I'd ever tasted. Because, you know, when you have dinner with the Queen, they don't do their shopping in Safeways or Woolworths or the local supermarket. Now, this is the very best. And I was really getting into it. I must admit, I got attached to it. Because I was talking to the person, then the waiter or the butler or whatever took it away. And I said, "Hang on." And the waiter told me, "Look, there's another plate coming next." And so the next plate was, I think they had some lamb, you know, some sheep, you know, which is very Australian. And for me, had a plate of Australian camembert. And that was really delicious, but this time I made sure I ate most of it before they took it away. And the last course was the best. Everyone else had macadamia pie. From macadamia nuts from Australia. And for me, they gave me a chocolate dish, dark chocolate. And it was beautifully arranged. It was actually made into like a vase of flowers. And I should have actually taken a picture of it, because it was the most amazing concoction I'd ever seen. They've really put some effort into making it interesting. I passed it around to all the other ambassadors, and they really enjoyed it as well as I did, but it looked much better. So I have great fun as a monk. It's not boring at all. I mean, how many of you can have a three-course meal of chocolate and cheese with the Queen of England? The next week I was busy mixing concrete with the other monks. Getting dirty. I remember once, actually, I was mixing concrete in the early days. I still know Abbott. And I was busy mixing concrete for one of the buildings over there. I worked really hard still. And as I was mixing concrete, we finished just before lunch, and so I was walking back to my room to take a shower before we had our dana, and I met this Sri Lankan lady. She was really dressed in an expensive sari, makeup, you know, looking very nice. She'd come to the monastery for the first visit. And so she passed me and she said, "Excuse me, where's the abbot?" And I thought very quickly. And I said, "If you go up to the room over there, the main hall, he'd probably be there in about 10 or 15 minutes. I never told her who the abbot was, obviously. because I was really messy. I was, you know, just been mixing concrete all morning, just, you know, full of dirt and really scruffy. So I went to my room, and I quickly washed and changed my clothes into my robe, and then went to meet her. And, you know, I told her some nice Dharma stories about meditation. She was really impressed. And just before she left, she said, "Look, I'm very impressed with your teachings in your monastery. This is what Buddhism should be. A real good monastery where monks are practicing well. But if you don't mind me saying one thing, I met one of your monks up there. And he was very badly dressed. And I say, Madam, I'll talk to him about it later." I never got angry with her or sort of said, explain what was happening. And when you have fun, how can you get crazy when you have fun? So I think all these stories I've told so far, you understand that when you don't get angry and don't get crazy and have put fun into life, you find peace, satisfaction, contentment. So happiness is one of the most important causes for contentment and for peace. Which is why that as Buddhists, please be happy Buddhists. Don't go around being strict and a pain in the neck to all your friends, converting them, or being sort of dogmatic. The purpose of these teachings is to bring peace to yourself and peace to others. And the sign of peace is a happy heart, a playful heart. Saw that in an article about happiness written by some, it was actually the psychologist who was running the Cambridge Institute of Wellbeing, a professor. It's one of the departments in Cambridge. And she said, a sign of a peaceful person is they're happy and playful. Which is, I'm a playful monk. Still am. You know, crack jokes and mess around. Because that is a path of peacefulness and happiness. It encourages, inspires, and gets rid of the idea of like controlling. You let go, enjoy the moment, make peace with it. So instead of fighting, you make peace. There is a time to put effort into one's life. We know how to do that. We've been trained in our schools, in our universities, to work hard. What Buddhism adds is how to rest and make peace. And when there's nothing you can do, how to sit still and just relax. It's amazing just the different techniques which we have to find peace instead of getting crazy. And you find if you get angry and get crazy, you always end up on the wrong side of the interchange. You know how to make peace. It's amazing just how things can turn out to your advantage. One of the stories, I'm not sure when I last told this story, but I told this story actually to the president of Sri Lanka when I saw him just over a year ago. I had breakfast with him. And interestingly, you know, this was the president, Mr. Rajapaksa. He's not just a constitutional president, he's the boss. He's the one who makes all the decisions, the head politician of the whole island. And he's obviously very concerned about the problem with the Tamil Tigers in the north and east of the country. And one interesting thing I found that when I had breakfast with the president in the palace, he gave me baked beans. That's what you do in palaces, you have baked beans for breakfast. He'd obviously done his research. But I told him this story because he was having a very difficult time with the press, like many politicians do. You make a tiny mistake and all the newspapers are on your back. And I know many of these politicians, they have such a difficult time because a lot of occasions the press, even though they're trying to do the best thing, they emphasize the negative because that's get the circulation up. So the president was having such a difficult time. So I wanted to tell him the story of the donkey who fell in the well. I also actually told this story to Mr. Khaw Boon Wan. He was the health minister in Singapore during the time of the NKF problem, the National Kidney Foundation, which was seen as actually embezzling a lot of funds. That was the accusation. Mr. Khaw Boon Wan, he's the health minister. They were said that he was negligent. He was watching this organization while he was on the job. So he got bad press as well. I told a story to him as well, and he appreciated it so much. He's now the patron of our Buddhist fellowship in Singapore. Anyway, the story was this. So one day, a donkey, an old donkey, was wandering through the forest. And as he was wandering through the forest, quite heedlessly, he never noticed a big hole in the ground until he fell in it. He fell down a disused well. Fortunately for the old donkey, by the time he got to the bottom, he hadn't broken any bones. A bit bruised, a bit scratched, but otherwise quite okay. But then he looked up, and the well was quite deep. It was a long way to the top, and donkeys can't climb. So there was Donkey in the bottom of the well, with no way out. So he did the only thing which Donkey could do. He started shouting, "Ah, ah, ah." Now I can't really do donkey sound, so that has to be good enough for you. "Ah, ah, ah." He started crying, minute after minute, hour after hour, "Ah, ah, ah." And eventually a farmer heard the sound. "And what's that sound? What's it coming from the well? That's really interesting." And so he went to the well, looked down, and saw an old donkey has fallen in the well. And that was a very cruel farmer. He never liked that old donkey. So he says, "Serve you right, falling into the well. You should be more mindful." But he thought, you know, that's a dangerous well. Now other people might fall into that. So, you know, I always meant to fill it in. Why don't I fill it in now with the donkey on the bottom? That way I can get rid of this donkey and also fill in the well. Ha, ha, ha. He was a very cruel farmer. So he got a spade and started digging earth and throwing the spadeful of earth into the well. And all this dirt started falling over Donkey. And he kept on going, "Ah, ah, ah." And every spadeful of earth, it just started covering the donkey. And when its legs were almost covered, it realized what was going on. That cruel farmer was burying him alive. "Ah, ah, ah." "Even louder," said the donkey. But did that stop the farmer? He just got more into shoveling. He was going to kill this donkey and fill up the well. "Ah, ah, ah," said the donkey. And then suddenly the donkey went quiet. Farmer thought, "Aha, I buried him already. Serve him right." But that's not what happened. The reason why the donkey got quiet, because he had what we call in Buddhism, insight. He saw the Dhamma. What Donkey saw was, this was a problem, but no need to get angry. "Turn it to my advantage," said Donkey. So the next shovelful of earth, which fell on the donkey's back, he never complained. He just shook it off, stamped it under his feet, and noticed he grew a centimeter higher. Another shovelful of earth, shake it off, stamp it in, another centimeter higher, but without making any sound. And the farmer thought he'd killed the donkey, but he hadn't. The donkey was getting higher and higher and higher. Another shovelful of earth, shake it off, stamp it in, another centimeter higher. And the farmer was so busy shoveling the earth, he never noticed a pair of ears appear on top of the well. And then a head appeared on top of the well. And then a body. And the donkey was soon high enough he could jump out of the well. And before he ran off, he bit the farmer on the backside to teach him a lesson and said, thanking him for saving him from the well. And the moral of that story, especially to politicians or to people in government like Victor, if you make a mistake and the press shovels dirt all over you, to shake it off, stamp it in, and you're a centimeter higher. Or if your boss at work starts shouting at you, shake it off, stamp it in, and you're a centimeter higher. But no need to complain and get angry. That's a very wise donkey. Now, surely you can be wiser than donkeys. Maybe. Maybe not. But that's how you use Dhamma. Instead of getting crazy and upset, make use of it for your advantage. So when you make peace with the difficulties of life, instead of getting crazy, it's amazing, because a donkey was peaceful, not making any noise, and knowing by being peaceful and being wise, stamping in the dirt, was getting closer and closer and closer to escape. So peace is the way to freedom. If you get crazy and we control and do too much and fight battles we can't fight, we can't win, we just make life much, much, much worse. So which is why, for crazy people's guide to peace, allow your craziness to be. Make peace with it. And then you find, no matter what you have to do in your life, like me as a monk, amazing, stupid things which I have to do. But I enjoy every moment of it, because I make peace with it, and I can exploit it. Every time anything strange happens to me, I can always use it as material for my talks. Thank you very much. You know, one of the most dangerous experiences which ever happened to me, I was so glad there wasn't a person with a camera. Because when I used to go to the south of Perth, there's a town called Bunbury. I used to go down there to the prison to teach. But because of difficulty with transport, I'd go there just after a quick lunch at the monastery and have to wait in the afternoon, because I could only go to the prison to teach in the evening. And it was actually the Catholic priests in the city, they gave me accommodation for the night. I always said I was a mole, a Buddhist mole in the Catholic headquarters. No, it wasn't really. I had good fun with them. But one afternoon, I had all afternoon free. I had a beautiful beach, and it was deserted. So I thought, I'd go and have a walk on the beach and have a meditate. So I was, we'll have a nice walk and sat on the beach, closed my eyes and meditated for about an hour. And when I opened my eyes, I got terrified. Because I looked to my left, and there's this beautiful 18-year-old girl in a bikini, a nice blonde, sitting right next to me. And on the other side was a beautiful brunette, also in a skimpy bikini. If anyone had taken a photograph at that time, I would not have been able to explain it. So what do you want? What do you want? And I know what happened. It was a local high school. That day was the last day of their examinations. For the end of the school year, they were doing examinations which would mean they go to university. And of course, after finishing their last exam of their whole school time, now being sort of Australian next to the beach, to celebrate, they'd changed into their bikinis, into their bathers, and gone down to the beach to celebrate. And they'd seen this monk sitting so peacefully, and these two girls were so fascinated, they sat down to wait for me, to come out of meditation, so they could ask about, you know, what were you doing? That was really cool, you know, meditating. So they had the best intentions there, and I just talked about meditation, gave them a few instructions, and asked questions about Buddhism. And then I got out as soon as I could. Because what would it look like? There is Ajahn Brahm with two bimbos on either arm. So you have some wonderful experiences of the life as a monk in the West, or in Singapore or Malaysia. But you don't get crazy about it. You don't get upset about it. You know, once I've been in a pub in Australia. You know what happened? It was a Rotary Club. The Rotary Club wanted to talk about Buddhism. So usually they use a pub. It's usually the back rooms of a pub. And so you don't have to go through the bar, you can just actually go to the back rooms of the pub and just give the talk and go out afterwards. But this particular pub, it was in the country, and I got to the entrance. How do you get to the room at the back where the Rotary Club meet? So there's only one way through the bar. So, oh my goodness, I can't go in a bar. So that's the only way. I thought, what should I do? So I thought to myself, I could see it, you know, maybe about 50 metres down the hall, I could see the room. I was okay, head down, run for it. So that's what I did. I put my head down and just made a beeline as fast as I could walk without drawing attention to myself. for the door, and I got about halfway when somebody grabbed me by the arm, and they were the Rotarian. Hey, you're the speaker tonight. What are you having to drink? I said, leave me alone. I'll take an orange juice, but in there. So I had to run away quickly. But in all of those encounters, you have really good fun because you don't allow yourself to go crazy. In the situations which present themselves to you in life, difficult situations, situations which shouldn't happen, embarrassing situations, or even painful situations. Remember, you can always make peace with anything in life, even pain and difficulties. Making peace means you allow it to be, you enjoy it, see the funny side of it, and you can turn it to your advantage no matter what it ever is. And that way you find you never go crazy. Crazy is fighting battles you just cannot win. Life is very fascinating and interesting. If you want to change it and make it different, that sends you crazy. Instead of appreciating the way your karma works out, make peace with it. That's the best thing you can possibly do. And life becomes fascinating, full of learning experiences. You grow, and as you grow, it becomes happier and more interesting. So that's some stories. Hopefully some funny stories. The crazy person's guide to peace of mind. And it was a crazy afternoon with some crazy stories. But I hope you got peace of mind. I did anyway.